Nevadans will soon head to the polls to determine who will become the Republican and Democratic nominees for governor. Among the candidates most likely to get the nod is the state's current Attorney General, Adam Laxalt. KUNR's Paul Boger sat down with the AG to learn more about his candidacy.
Mr. Laxalt, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for having me.
I know we don't have a lot of time, so let's jump right in. Why are you running for governor?
I love Nevada. I think Nevada's provided some incredible opportunity for generations, and I want to fight to keep it that way.
Sir, you don't have a long history here in the state. As an elected official, you're still in your first term as AG. You know, what do you see as your qualifications for the position?
Well, I'm certainly not a career politician. What I bring to the office, I'm the only person in this race that actually represents every community in the state of Nevada now. We've done an incredible job of being able to reach those communities and be effective in the Attorney General's office. We've had some landmark efforts that have never been done out of this office, like we've been able to tackle the rape kit backlog that was a 30-year-in-the-making issue for the state of Nevada with over 8,000 untested sexual assault kits. That's something we took on in the first months of office, and we're able to find funding to eliminate the entire rape kit backlog, 8,000 kits, and to continue to work on that problem so that we could make sure we're able to prosecute these sexual assaulters and get them off our streets for good. That's just one example, but we've been able to work with local law enforcement across the state and forge relationships that have never existed before as the top law enforcement officer to make sure we're working alongside of them. And I think that's been one of my trademarks, is that I get things done. I'm not a career politician.
I want to dive a little deeper into your positions on some of the issues affecting the state. Most recently, you released your education plan, and that includes continuing to expand school choice. I'm going to make a wild assumption and assume that means funding ESAs and maybe expanding charter schools, correct?
I think choice is an important tool for our education system. And our education system obviously is at the bottom, and that's unacceptable. It's something I'm committed to improve. I commend Governor Sandoval for the reforms that he's put through in the last few sessions. I think they're important and are working their way towards improving our schools. I want to support those and continue those. But choice is a big area where we can give our parents and our students individual, unique opportunities to be able to tailor their education to their kids. And so I support expansion of public charter schools. There's waiting lists all across our state for them, and they've proven to be incredibly successful. I support doubling the opportunity scholarship, which was passed last session, or I should say the dollar figure was raised considerably last session. That's a great avenue for us as a state to be able to give underprivileged kids more access to opportunities and different educational styles. And I also support funding of ESAs. It's something that we fought for the Attorney General's office to defend the state law, and it was declared constitutional, as your listeners may know. And, you know, now we need to try to find some money for it.
You are on the record as saying you want to repeal the Commerce Tax. The Commerce Tax was passed as a way to bolster education funding here in the state. You know, how do those two ideas mesh, and can you continue to fund education at the current levels, or even, as you're saying, expand some forms of education funding at the same time as repealing that tax?
Absolutely. I'm committed to keeping our education funding levels consistent. Hopefully we can increase them in certain areas. You know, it's important to know the commerce tax is 2.3% of our general fund budget. It's less than 1% of our overall spending. And what we saw in 2017 is we saw a lot of economic growth, which meant more revenues to the state. We also have the marijuana tax, which is new. I have found efficiencies in my 400-person agency to be able to do more with less. And we've returned money to our state every single time, every budget I've had. I think that we can find more efficiencies across state government. So the combination of those three things, I'm very confident we can not only make up the gap, of the commerce tax, but we are also going to be able to fund some of my education priorities.
You've been firm on your opposition to any plan that would make Nevada a sanctuary state. What are your concerns? And are you at all concerned about possibly alienating the state's growing Latino population?
My job as the top law enforcement officer is to think of public safety first. And when I make those decisions, I'm not looking at voting blocks or whether or not it's going to help me gain or lose votes. It is crystal clear to me that our local law enforcement needs to work with federal authorities to get dangerous repeat felons off our street and make sure that they're not able to come out and hurt our community. So, you know, yes, it's been made a politically charged issue. I don't think it's a very complicated issue. It doesn't make us safer, and I'm opposed to it.
You recently had discussions with many of the state's law enforcement officers and sheriffs to talk about school safety. It's been a growing concern as of late. You know, what were some of the recommendations of that meeting?
Well, since I've taken office, you know, I've wanted to make sure that when there are big challenges in the state, we try to find a way to step up and take them on. It's important to know that the rape kit backlog, for example, isn't in the Attorney General's office. We don't have any rape kits. These were local issues, but we took that on and got everyone to the table so that we can resolve it. And we've done that in a lot of areas since I've been elected. And so after this school shooting, obviously, you know, it was incredibly concerning on all of our minds. I have three little children, and all of our parents want to make sure our schools are safe. So I was able to bring together law enforcement and school officials from across the state in a very quick time, and to do a very important summit so that we could spend many hours going over all the issues that we think make our schools less safe. And we're in the process of writing that report, and I look forward to releasing it in the next 2 to 3 weeks.
When it comes to, speaking of the Parkland shooting, the Las Vegas shooting last October, you know, many voters say there needs to be some kind of gun control reform. You know, what is your take on that issue?
A lot of the debate on gun control are, you know, vague solutions that, you know, wouldn't have prevented the Parkland shooting, wouldn't have prevented the Las Vegas shooting. And I am a firm protector of Second Amendment rights and don't think that we should be going after law-abiding citizens and their right to bear arms.
In the same vein, you've previously said that question one, the background check amendment on the 2016 election, is unenforceable because the state doesn't have the authority to carry out the checks. My question isn't why you came to that decision, but rather, can the amendment be fixed, and is there a version of it that you would support?
So, obviously, question one and this background check initiative has been already used as a political battering ram. You know, one of my opponents continues to say that I need to enforce question one, and she's been an elected official for 3 decades, and she knows that the Attorney General doesn't enforce ballot initiatives. That's just not what we do. As far as being able to fix the ballot initiative, I mean, the only thing that they can do is try to do a brand new ballot initiative. You cannot change the language of a ballot initiative. You can't go to a legislature for 3 years. So, you know, they wrote a bad bill, and I know they're sore about that, and they spent a lot of money on it, but it's not the state's fault that they didn't write the proper ballot initiative. And I want to say that, you know, as I said with our marijuana ballot initiative, they wrote this thing properly, and it actually said that the Department of Public Safety was supposed to do these background checks. This would be going on today. There never would have been any issue. The reason why this thing has been held up is because they specifically said the FBI has to do it, and there's no way to move around a ballot initiative specific language that designated the FBI and only the FBI to do the background checks.
If it came back up for a vote, if the legislature could do it, would you support a background check bill?
I'd have to see the specifics. That it cannot go up for a bill in 2019, and so we're talking 3-4 years from now, and be happy to see what that looks like in a few years.
Wrapping up, you're facing a primary challenge from Treasurer Dan Schwartz. How do you convince Republican voters that you're the man for the job?
You know, I'm proud to put my record up against anyone in this race, both the primary and the general election. We've been able to get incredible results with this office. I currently represent live and in the flesh in local communities all across this state, and we've rolled up our sleeves and we've been able to help communities and actually be responsive. I look forward to fighting for the votes of first, you know, Republican primary voters, but then all Nevadans, in the general election, and, you know, very confident that, our record will hold up well against anyone else in this race.
Mr. Schwartz has repeatedly called for a debate between the two of you. Do you think he'll take him up on that offer?
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to the debate. Looking forward to primary debate as well as general election debates.
Okay. I'll give him a call right after this. At the end of the day, if you become governor, you're very likely going to have to work with a Democratic-led legislature. How do you accomplish the goals that you've outlined here and advance your agenda?
Well, I have a record of being able to work across the aisle. And, you know, a lot of people say that, but we actually have done unprecedented things with this office, all of which required getting bipartisan support. The rape kit issue that I spoke about, we had to go to the legislature and get bipartisan, unanimous support for both that funding and our program to try to eliminate the backlog. Our new elder fraud unit was something that we had to get unanimous bipartisan support for. We have the opioid prescription for addiction program, which is a great program that focuses on prevention. It also has the first time ever where the Attorney General's office is working with the FBI on investigating dirty doctors. All these things we had to get bipartisan support for. So, you know, I look forward to finding important solutions for Nevada, and I believe that Democrats will support these things that will help our state.
Adam Laxalt is Nevada's 33rd Attorney General and is a Republican candidate for governor. Mr. Laxalt, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you, Paul. Really appreciate it.
For Reno Public Radio, I'm Paul Boger.
That was KUNR's Paul Boger speaking with Attorney General Adam Laxalt about his bid to become Nevada's next governor. You can hear more of their conversation at KUNR.org, along with our interviews with Democratic candidates Steve Sisolak and Chris Giunchiliani. We've also reached out to Republican candidate and state treasurer Dan Schwartz. We're still waiting to hear back.